Hi, this is Leah.
And this is Channing.
And you've reached Vessel, Art is a Doorway.
Welcome to episode 5.
Hi, you guys. Welcome to the podcast. And thank you so much for being here. And thank you also for all the love you've been sending our way because of the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. One of the recent comments we got was from Lorraine Erickson on the CLSS.studio. Notice what she says. Channing and Leah, hello, hello, hello. I so enjoyed your podcast. It educated me and enriched my life by awakening an inner calling to the art emotions that I haven't been paying much attention to for quite a long time now. I thank you both immensely for speaking up and out regarding the importance and the impact that art has on a community, a city, even the world. Its accessibility early on in a child's life often makes an abused child feel hope, where otherwise there would be nothing but a dismal, dull existence. I do know wherefrom I speak. Keep up the fine effort. What you have to say and share are priceless. Thank you so much, Lorraine. That really means a lot to us that you would express those warm feelings towards us. We thank you so much. And we feel the same way about many of the subjects that we're talking about.
Yeah, I got goosebumps as you were reading her testimonial right now.
Yeah, Leah. Now, last week, you recently just launched that augmented virtual reality art show, When There Are No Words. Now, what have you been hearing from the audience on that?
I've been getting so much love, and thank you guys for the pictures and the comments you've been sending my way. One was from Elle of Elle Rally. She's a fantastic fashion designer that has a mission to recreate the created by upcycling fabrics. But it's funny, when you watch her on Instagram, you can just tell not only is she responsible when it comes to her mission, but each piece, she just takes so much time, and the love just oozes forth from the way she makes her clothing. But what she wrote to me was, what a great idea. I loved everything about this virtual experience. Thank you for sharing your vision with me. It was beautifully done. I cannot wait to see it in person and meet you once again. So thank you so much, Elle, for sending that my way. I really respect what you do, so that means a lot. And the next one came from Marnie. What she wrote was, I love your virtual exhibit. What a great idea. Art exhibit at the beach. It was a great getaway. How do you think Join would look in my dining room? And she posted or sent me a picture of the art piece Join, and it actually looked really beautiful in her dining room.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marnie, for sending that to us. That was really special for us. So today, audience, we're interviewing the artist, Randy Matuszewicz. Now, we were able to meet Randy a couple of months ago before the whole pandemic happened at Los Angeles Art Fair. And we went into her booth and we were just really amazed by some of Randy's work.
I love how Randy approaches her work in the studio. She mentions how she approaches her artwork like experiments in a lab, and she builds the pieces to really like grab onto the viewer's emotions. And I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah, it's almost like a science to her. Another thing that I thought was really interesting, and I think you'll find it interesting too, listeners, is that when she creates some of these characters, she wants the viewer to slow their gaze on the paintings that she creates. And she wants to inspire the viewer to want to talk to some of these characters that she creates. And she even mentioned that the work isn't even complete until that happens.
One of the reasons why I love doing these types of interviews with artists and designers and musicians and makers is to really show how the way they work is very intentional. So not only is she skillful at the way she paints, but she is skillful at helping people feel a certain way or sparking something in a viewer. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing how she does that. So here she is, Randy Matuszewicz.
Randy Matuszewicz, we are so happy to have you on the podcast. Such a beautiful individual, people. We got a chance to meet Randy at the Los Angeles Art Fair. And to not get too emotional here, you know, we saw her booth
We walked into it. She was one of the few artists actually that actually had a booth at the Los Angeles Art Fair. And when Leah and I, we went into the booth, we were so impressed. Your work is amazing, Randy.
Thank you.
We love you. And just by a brief conversation, we fell in love with this little lady. And we thought it would be really nice to get the opening on the discussion of how art, our emotions, our thinking, how all of that triggers. You're meeting Randy Matushevitz. And she is an excellent person to talk about this subject. We are so happy to have you, Randy. And you're such a beautiful individual. So just to open up in this conversation, Randy, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and where you grew up.
I grew up in several places, but I guess I consider Las Vegas home. We moved there when I was 12. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was in Miami and I was born in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in L.A.
Now, upstate New York? Where exactly in upstate New York?
Rochester.
You know, my brother was in Rochester. How long? Maybe for about yeah, 10 or 12 years. Yeah,
wife is from Rochester.
Yeah. My brother,
the
older brother.
The best people are there. Good people.
Yeah. Also, we love the snow in Rochester. We went there once in January, but that's awesome. So what was your first memory of art and design?
Well, it's really interesting because I've been thinking about this question, and my first memory of art wasn't necessarily visual art. I think it was really when I was living in Las Vegas and going to see the Las Vegas version of shows and the costuming. Mm-hmm. So that was one introduction to art.
Great.
That was the first, I would say.
Yeah. Awesome.
A little not traditional.
The progression into the woman that you are today, you know, what was that progression like? You know, you came in contact with that fair, but, you know, what were some of the things that kind of led up to you being the artist that you are today?
Yeah, I was a science interested kid in high school and thought I was going into chemistry or something in the sciences or medical. And I found college really tough, the transition, leaving home. I wasn't prepared. There's probably millions of reasons for that. And somewhere along the way, I wound up in California and decided to go back to college, went to Cal State Northridge and started taking not only the classes I had to take, but the classes I wanted to take. So I took for one of those general requirements, a fine art drawing class, figure drawing, live model for non-majors, you know, drawing, figurative drawing 101 probably. And this was the class that changed everything. The teacher started the class with x-rays of old master paintings from the Baroque, most specifically. And I was like, well, if they can change their paintings, so can I. And I'm like, but I can't even draw. Yeah. But that love of that you could see different things in art. And then, of course, in conjunction, I took an art history class. Again, college was my introduction to art on a more formal level. Mm-hmm. I do, as I'm speaking, recall a trip to New York where my aunt lived in Staten Island and she took me into the city. And I could assume we went to the Met. We went to saw a theater, a play. You know, that's who she was, my mom's sister. And, you know, she showed me buildings and she just got me to think. And when I quickly trace a lot of my family's lineage, there was always a high aesthetic in the house, things to look put together. My mother was an immaculate dresser, and no matter what her budget was or was not, she was put together and tailored and knew what to do, and later found out that the family lineage was tailoring back in Russia before the 1900s, and when they came here, and everything shifts, of course. So that would be my first introductions, and that was the beginning. It was a long struggle on my road to being an artist because I didn't feel like one for a very long time. I just knew that I had something to say, and I knew that making art, I had hoped I'd have something to say for bigger people, you know, for the world. But making art would be something that would be, for me, very satisfying. I just felt that it allowed me for the first time control of something in this very confusing early 20-something age, which for me, you know, now we think it's so easy. We hear stories and it just sounds like, oh, these kids are so amazing. And they went from being, you know, high school, just normal kids being a little unfocused to, oh, wow, well, we went to college and we knew exactly what we wanted. Well, that wasn't it took me a little more steps than that.
Do you find, I remember listening to an interview by Kerry James Marshall. And he kind of mentioned that when he goes into his studio, that he kind of feels like it's more like a laboratory. So it was kind of interesting to me, the fact that you mentioned how you were into science first. Do you feel like your studio is kind of like your laboratory?
Absolutely. Every piece I work on is an experiment. So it's rich. I'm inspired. I may have ideas, but it's the studio practice that leads it and defines it. And then I can kind of hone it in by recognizing what's happening as a similarity. So to repeat, every body of work starts with an experiment, a hypothesis of elements that I work with and I react to and work with and react to until they speak.
And, you know, just going into your studio booth, when we met you at the Los Angeles Art Fair, that was one of the things that I think I kept mentioning in our conversations, is that seeing some of these beautiful portraits that you're making, it's almost, we're in a studio, by the way, audience. We have the privilege of being in Randy's studio right now. And all around us is just some of these gorgeous paintings of people. And it almost feels as though these people are talking to us. To me, I don't feel afraid. I feel like these people
thank you
are very kind. They're having a discussion with you. Could you describe that process a little bit?
Well, you know, I've been doing faces for well over a year now. My foundation is in, you know, figure drawing from a live model. When I decided to go back to oil painting, I decided I would go with what came natural. My love of faces, my love of people watching. I grew up in a cartoon town, Las Vegas. Before that, another cartoon town, Miami, Los Angeles, New York. I've lived in all of them. So it's a lot of tourism, a lot of strangers, not empty spaces. And you get to see a lot of faces, and every face is a story. Every expression is an unspoken communication, an unspoken something. I don't, in some ways, we're only speaking to ourselves. It's kind of, so I've taken this further ideas in my work. But so this body of work with these faces, I decided that in the age of a selfie, in the age when we can have beautiful cameras and we all get looking very pretty, that it would be really wonderful to capture a life force in a moment of when we're just being. Mm-hmm. And that's how these faces started. And just to add to it, what the audience can't see yet, and hopefully we'll be having pictures up for you guys to look at, there's a lot of patterning in the background and mixed into the layers that create the figuration and the face. And they work together to create a sense of place and time, and to tell you more about these faces who want to talk to you, who want you to look at them slowly, these faces who have a frenetic mark. And for me, they're all stories of being, the kind of being that each of us can tap into. And they're emotional and expressive more than a specific person or a specific story. That feeling that we have all felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really awesome. You know, thinking about a feeling and thinking about things from an emotional state. I work in the medical profession, and for over 22 years, you know, just seeing how art affects people. I remember even when I was doing my clinicals as a student radiographer back in Atlanta, I would rotate through the radiation therapy department. And we would see some of these patients, and, you know, sometimes, you know, you would joke and laugh with them. And you'd see them, you know, throughout the week. And then one day they didn't show up and they passed away. And I remember one particular event when there was a case when a doctor, I was in the room at the time, and the doctor told the patient that unfortunately they would not last no more than 3 months. And I took a lunch break that day and I went outside and I saw that patient looking at a piece of art. And there was an emotional connection happening there, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, art affects us emotionally, you know, just for a period of time. That patient could just drift off into outer space and just sure. look at something that was awesome. And that's what I think of when I see your work. You know, it's almost like people can go into a time warp and like, whoop, boop, you just got snatched in a black hole. Right.
You know, that's a big compliment. Yeah. That's what I want to happen. I want that slow gaze to inspire the viewer, to the point where the work is talking to them. And in my mind, the work's not complete until that happens. And the other part that gives me great joy, and it's kind of a little ironic thing that makes me chuckle, is I get to think about that as, well, you're talking to something that's silent, mm-hmm. that you think's talking to you, and we are talking to ourselves, and we are telling ourselves good things, bad things, mm-hmm. many things. And this is the opportunity to just explore that headspace. And I do it through art as a way to understand my own feelings, or just those strangers that I'm not connecting with, but somehow feel a connection with.
Right. And that's amazing. When we think about, you know, just like, you know, I was saying about that patient, that artist wasn't in the room at the time. And sometimes with you, some places that you may, you know, have your art acquired, or it may be hanging, you don't see the interaction, but an interaction is happening.
That's right.
You know, so there is a pretty interesting impact that art and music and literature that it has on viewers and listeners. You know, so that's one thing that we really like to expound on in the podcast. Now, how do you feel art, design, creativity, all of that bundled up has changed you, Randy?
That's a great question, because it's given me, it's been a long journey. Before I can, I'm going to have multiple like ways of answering. It's been a long journey to get here, but it's given me finally permission to accept myself on so many different levels. I have set up goals and failed. I have been made fun of as an early art student for making works that were less than put together well and just lack of whatever skill or just ability to communicate. And it's changed me in the sense of, I think my empathy has grown through that struggle. My desire to connect with people is probably something I've always had. Living in this world where we have so many fake connections, it's bigger than ever. We think we're globally connected. And of course we are in many ways, but we don't really know who we're connecting with. And then we live in this really, the conundrum of our us versus them system that didn't just start now, but really went crazy in the late 20th century and went a little bonkers. We jumped off the railroad. And, you know, it's just changed me. It's just, it's given me a place also to go that really, as much as I want it to be and share it for others, with others, it's for me. It's a place for me to understand my own thoughts. It's a place for me to break my patterns. It's a place for me to try and critically think without judgment. Like, I don't have to say I'm a horrible person because I couldn't paint a face. For the first 3 years, I stood in front of a live model. I couldn't make it look three-dimensional. Yeah, but I can, but you know, you learn to write your name. You can learn to make a picture. If you can learn to express other thoughts beyond personal, but maybe rooted in personal, this just takes practice. And we all have different gifts. But it's just like music. Many people play a beautiful piano or a beautiful instrument or can sing beautifully, but they're not writing concertos or writing these melodies. But they get such relief of their spirit. It's a lightness that happens. And that's what I experience when with the people who have obtain my work for their private collections. And some of them are, you know, big names. Some of them are just some regular people. Other, you know, people who've bought which bodies of work. Some people don't want to think that hard. And I've known a lot of older people love this very whimsical body of work I did many years ago, but they're just so light. It's so light. And that's all they keep saying, especially women. Women like my work a lot. My work now, these faces are, I think, reaching a broader, for the first time, I'm successful in reaching a broader audience and worked very hard to mature my conversation through the work. But again, that's my pleasure, and it's giving me, keeps me out of trouble, if you said what I gained from it. You know,
being in trouble.
I was those 20s, those 20 somethings. Okay. No one taught me what not to do. Okay. Not how to stay out of that.
Yeah.
You know.
So why do you think, have you seen any interactions with
or maybe have some of your collectors mentioned to you, like, can you think of anything maybe like one or two people have said about your work as they collected or as they were living with your work?
Well, especially, you know, different bodies, different things. Some would be some of the early collectors specifically were buying work when I lived in Las Vegas that really dealt with home and family and celebrating a lot of patterning, a very early Americana kind of style that was still symbolic of real places and spaces, but they felt childlike. They felt like they could narrate some kind of book. And they were purposely meant at a time when I was feeling the most sad for personal family, multiple family experiences at this one period of time, I painted these grossly, obscenely happy pieces, color-wise, wow. Obscenely. It was like they were almost painful. The color was so saturated and bold. They were almost ugly. Again, that thing between the sublime and the grotesque that I still do, that I still love. That's just part of who I am, because that's the duality of the life. So these people who have bought work that period, they still resonate. I had an elementary school acquire a piece back in Las Vegas. So it shows you how much it resonates, you know, and that they would put it with grade schoolers. This is a blessing for that body of work. I've gone on this body of work, you know, to have museums collected. I have work actually at the Cleveland Clinic for their Alzheimer's Brain Institute in Las Vegas. And that work was also selected for those lighter, whimsical colorations and patterns. And this work, the people have come out of the woodwork to buy this work through Instagram, strangers in other countries who I'm so blessed to have reached out for me just in the moments when I was like, God, no one's understanding my work. They're getting frightened. It was a little different than the body you've saw and you'll be posting about, but this in between practice. And some people were very scared. I used to joke, well, that's only because they're seeing themselves and they're afraid. But the truth was, I wanted to soften it. I wanted them to enter and learn. And I was able to learn old master techniques in a solvent-free way that was more healthy, but that could also hold this translucence in these forms. So, you know, did I answer it, you guys?
No, it was great.
Okay. Well, just tell me if I skipped around.
This is totally great, because one of the things that we kind of feel that isn't really touched on. We hear a lot of information about how artists, how they've become successful or their thoughts about how to start up a business. But not a lot of people are really talking about how the art is having an impact on people, how when they come home, they actually see these images and it's having an effect on them. I got a chance to talk to one of the collectors for Lia, and, you know, we were just talking about the idea of this podcast, and I asked him, well, you know, how does that piece in your house make you feel? And what would it be like if you didn't have that piece? And he said it would be like a hole in the wall.
Wow. That's beautiful.
You know, and that's one of the things I think about when I see your pieces, like they just stand out, people. You know, and one of the things that's interesting is the eyes. The eyes feel like they're following you around the room. And it's a good feeling. It's a great feeling. She just pumped her fist, people. And that's awesome.
Kind of like an old shucks. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, that's taken a lot. There's a lot of, that's through a lot of work and knowing how to draw. But there's tricks. I can't give you all my tricks.
Understandable.
but just if you study the old masters, it's a trick that we can all find.
Very interesting.
It's not a hidden thing.
Yeah.
It's just something they did underneath their paintings. So I do it in the layers of mine.
And that's kind of like goes back to what we were talking about before, even with the science. It was funny. We just had a interview with a musician, and we were talking a little bit about his process and how sometimes you can start off with a idea, kind of like a template of what you want to do, but you have to. It's important to have that intuitiveness to kind of really like make the work blossom. And it kind of makes me think about what you just said too about your work. Like you've kind of learned from those masters and you're able to implement that into your technique and, you know, in your laboratory in the studio. But it's also the whole point of it is to create this emotional connection with the viewer.
Yes, because I consider these portraits to be not portraits of individuals, but just portraits of emotions, of micro expressions that are layered and layered in the way I build the form through the mark making, this abstract expressionist kind of mark, a de Kooning mark, you know, living in, you know, that results in this not as dramatic as Francis Bacon, that what always feels like now has been interpreted only as faces melting off. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's more of that study of physics, mm-hmm. that we're always moving. We look solid, but we're not. So you say my love of science or Star Trek, one of them, you know, both. So, you know, I began to, again, to go back, I have one collector who bought an image that many people find incredibly frightening. And, you know, I find that the works, like I said, they need this slow gaze, this long living with, and he's like, we laugh at each other now because this image is screaming in a way, or laughing scarily, boisterously, like with this Toulouse-Lautrec lighting, but but he loves it. Now he laughs. People, his friends love it. And it harkens in my mind something someone said who bought my work about 10 years ago and still loves the piece. Your work is never boring. There's always the thing you see when you're the furthest away. And as you come closer, there's always more to see. They're never dull. I can sit close to them and have something to see. I could go far away across the room and have something different to see. They're never dull. What more can you ask for from someone who wants to live with your work, that they have this expanded sense and that the work adds to them? Maybe they're not as lonely because one of my faces is living with them. Maybe someone lives alone, or their partner's not there a lot, or their dog died and they need my painting to tell them something.
Yeah, and I remember having a discussion with you about some of the names that you gave some of your pieces. And you mentioned, I believe one was Debbie. Am I correct? Is it Debbie or Betty? No?
Neither. Maybe it spoke to him and...
That's the name you got, because maybe, but that's the whole beauty. There was a time I used to name my works very specifically, but now maybe you're thinking Matthew Barney, Ode to Matt Chuckles. Are you thinking about Chuckles potentially?
Give us some of the names.
Was Chuckles, an ode to Matthew Barney. This big one behind you right here is Resolute. Mm. I see. Okay. Mm. I am woman, .. Helen Reddy. Mm. There were Flowers in My Hair. Happy to hear you. Mm-hmm. We're going around the room, people. Sorry you can't see them all at the same time. This one's Out on the Town. And there were some smaller ones, At the Wedding. You know, mm-hmm. There was a woman that I named Call Me Coiffed. Mm-hmm. I just left the salon. So they, you know, there was Prudently Prudence. So I don't know where Betty came out, but, you know, I'm curious which one wants to be Betty. I need to know, because they didn't tell me. They gave up, see?
Well, maybe that's something for the future.
Well, you have to tell me so I can sit down and have a talk.
Our imminent future.
Well, you know, there's works off to the side, and one of them might be.
Might be a Betty, yeah. What were some of your first memorable collectors? You mentioned that you had some of the collectors from different countries.
Or even, like you mentioned, the elementary school that bought your piece. Mm-hmm. Did they say anything? Were you? I'm not sure if it was through a dealer.
It wasn't. Most of my work is. It's only now that I have dealers. Mm-hmm. I had dealers when I first came out of graduate school. I was one of those lucky people who got picked up right away. So I wound up having collectors in Buenos Aires who were dealing more with found and fabricated items. Again, dealing with nurturing 1,500 baby bottles on a wall, like all these past giant pacifiers made out of fabric, all in the 90s, which we still see these kind of materials being worked with. But I'm back to traditional oil painting because when I was making things, you know, learning it was dead. So these people have mostly found me either in Las Vegas, it's a very small community. If you're involved with your synagogue or church, or you're involved with your school where your kids are, it's not hard to find people who have a little bit extra money. It was Las Vegas, mm-hmm. or, you know, or in the parts of New York. They just were there. People who had enough. The work wasn't such a high ticket in my emerging moments. And it's still, I think, fairly reasonable. But they're all special moments. They're special encounters. They're unique, each one. I can't give names. I can only give names of the public collections. Some people are really prominent people, families of people who have last names we would recognize. And others are people like me and you. You might not know us if you passed us in the street, you know, and they just are living. Or, you know, and so I don't know how to explain that feeling. It's just a blessing. I sell work. I don't sell work. Sometimes you have to find the right venue. So sales isn't always the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a big thing when someone does it. But when I did the LA Art Show, I met hundreds. I don't know how many people came through that fair. So let's just mm-hmm. keep it sensible, like hundreds mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. a couple of thousand. Mm-hmm. But I probably mm-hmm. met 800 people who were touched by this work. Mm. Sometimes you think maybe they could have money, or the ones you know don't have money, because sometimes you can tell. Sometimes you can never tell because this is LA. LA mm-hmm. is the most, you could,
that's so true.
You could walk up in your ripped up Converse and right. Levi's and that person's going to drop down the cash, you know? Right. You know, that's what I love about LA. However, that being said, it was the appreciation. The mm-hmm. girl who at the end of the art fair, the last day, the last bell, everyone please, you know, very politely close up your deals and leave. Mm-hmm. Not, they say yeah, it yeah, nicer yeah. than that. Okay? yeah. But we all know what it means. And she came running over and she was crying. And she was in her early 20s and she's only lived in Los Angeles a few months. And something in the way I talked about the work, making a connection in this false sense of connection, this disconnected digital AI kind of environment that's sneaking up on us more and more. It's not like I'm getting to look at four eyeballs right now. It's so exciting, you know? And I can memorize faces and it's just like what I'm into, that mm-hmm. thing that makes us all human forever. But mm-hmm. this girl who had to come back, I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I was so stunned, blown away, stunned. And I wanted to just hug her. I took a lot of pictures of her. She was supposed to friend me on Instagram and say hi so I could know who she was. She hasn't, to my mm-hmm. knowledge. So if you're out there and you hear this, do that. Because I made her a very special offer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because she's new to LA. We all know how hard that could be. Mm-hmm. It's an elevated cost kind of city. And I told her if she comes to the studio and I'm going to do this picture of her, that she can have it. It will be small, but she can have it.
Wow. Yeah. That's so kind.
Because yeah. I've never had anyone come up to me crying wow. mm-hmm. with how it just made everything okay. Mm-hmm. It's a, what do you do with that? Mm-hmm. That is more than anyone can ask for. I didn't mm-hmm. ask for it. I didn't expect it. You know, you don't know. And that's, it touched her. It mm-hmm. gave her a sense of grounding. Wow.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Wow.
Exactly.
And yeah. thank you and blessings for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's something about creating something with your hand.
For
putting
me, it's
a lot
important.
Of thought.
Especially in this digital world, in this technological world, mm-hmm. not to take anything away from the wonderful artists who work with technology. They're still making it. They're mm-hmm. layering it. They're deconstructing and reconstructing. Hopefully they're pushing more than one button to get the effect they're getting mm-hmm. for me, just because I'd like to think they're having something going on in their mind that's keeping them on this journey and this investigation and that's keeping them engaged. So this isn't about that, but this is about just that when you're a maker, it's that responsibility to put your heart, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of artist I am, but there's so many of us and so many different kinds. And for me, it's the biggest compliment to have that human connection that goes beyond color, that mm-hmm. goes beyond mm-hmm. gender, because that's the goal, just to reach all of us. The world's so deconstructed, mm-hmm. the philosophies, the education. I mean, the schools can't even get to history, right? Mm-hmm. So what are we learning? It's like history's only now because of the, mm-hmm. we're so fast, that impression on the phone, so mm-hmm. fast. Mm-hmm. And I think about these things. So that's the best thing, that someone wants it. You know, that's a funny thing, buying. So I really try not to make that my goal. Mm-hmm. That's not it. It can't be mm-hmm. it because history, artists, so the works, they died. The work mm-hmm. got fancy, expensive. Right. You know, I don't know. So I try not to put it in those terms, but I am getting the respect of my peers this year. I'm the respect of people who are doctors and lawyers, writers for Hollywood. We live in a creative city. Mm-hmm. It's harder than most cities to be creative in a creative
right.
city.
Right.
The judgment is the bar is higher. yeah, Let's yeah. put it this way. The bar is yeah, higher.
The bar is higher.
Because you got a lot of people who can do a lot of things mm-hmm. creatively. And that's kind of cool. That's really cool to be challenged mm-hmm. like that. Did I answer you?
Yeah, that was perfect. Because again, you know, the reason we were bringing up collectors is because those just happen to be some of the people that have saved up or, you know, they still want to take that money. A lot of times they may own their own businesses or what have. And so sometimes when they make those purchases, it's because it's something that's moved them and they feel like it's important enough to live with that piece of work.
Or they commission it, which is really special because I have special commission rules in that I work with you. I will let you show me your color scheme. I don't promise to I promise to make it work within your color scheme, but you can't tell me what to make it. I don't let you see it, but I promise you, you will love it and let me love on it.
Yeah, I love that.
But I really love the example you even gave about the girl who came back because, you know, those are the types of things that we talk about too. It's hard to put into words why art is important. And so that's why we talk about the reactions of people. Whether they buy it, she really wants it. I'm sure she's thinking about you. She's probably just nervous or intimidated.
She may never call me, but she knows somebody was willing to do it.
Right.
Someone is willing to honor her heart. And you were going to, I know we were talking about Ellen Dasaniaki when I first read in the 90s her book Homo Aestheticus, and she was doing her work anthropologically, social anthropologist, and she was studying tribal culture in an area where it would rain, women's work, men's work, how they decorated, what they wore, the procedures for rituals, and how women were in charge of redecorating the mud huts every time they would melt and something else with earth colors. And she is the first time I heard of the hypothesis of making special to go to what you guys, the purpose here, you're asking about the power of creativity of art forms on the human psyche and the human biology. And she felt it was a sociobiological need for us to decorate, organize, beautify, simplify in some ways, and embellish, to make special, to embellish. So, you know, around us, to give us comfort. And that we needed it as a species. We need to have beauty. And if you look, like you live in an area where you see a lot of homeless, LA, it's everywhere. I see a lot too. And you can see who does that until they get moved along. But there is that versus the people who just like are a mess, you know, or maybe are mentally ill. And I'm very empathetic with all of it. I just think there should be rents that are affordable somewhere, you know, that just the bleeding needs to stop.
Yeah.
It's about the empathy. And you can see that no matter what, the point is that no matter what, how people are, you know, I did some photos for an artist who's doing this, what does LA look like? And I pass this area where people are, you know, a few homeless people all the time. And this young girl did not look, if you saw her walking anywhere else, you wouldn't know she was homeless. She was well-groomed. She was clean looking. She had on accenting jewelry. She looked like she had like matching socks and sneakers. She had Nikes because I took some photos. They wound up in this exhibition just talking about our city. And she's a student at USC, a grad student, Diane Williams. I felt so honored to be included because I wanted to show that dichotomy, that it's not what you think. You don't know who's out there. Don't assume we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know when you see the family or the old lady who has elephantitis in one leg and not the other because she can't afford meds, because we don't see that in the U.S. that much anymore because people get medicated right away. The doctors are on it. You know, we're so fortunate. But then in these odd moments, you see the things where it's not so smooth and it's disturbing. Mm-hmm. So I've come to these spaces out of doing earlier, very dystopian work. I've had my own personal experiences. I've sort of threw them in there with what I see around me and talked to that. And I decided that as effective and as frightening, because I was doing that 2 to 3 years ago and being told, well, as a white woman, why are you talking about that as a middle-class white person? I went to Germany for some artwork, same body of work. And they were like, if not you, then who? You're an educated person. You see it. You're in the middle, you see. And that's when I came home and I said, I have to find a better way. Mm-hmm. And that's what led to the portraits.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Because a dealer, a gallerist, a critic here, I've had many conversations, fortunate to get people to come to the studio, pay to go to other kinds of workshops like we had discussed, Leah, and to just feed my knowledge and expand my thinking. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, till the day I die, I'm going to be trying to cultivate an image that I hope will resonate with humans. And it goes, and I even found excited by Marcel Gest, Carnegie Mellon, watch 60 Minutes. You'll see his studies for fMRI, where he is mapping the feelings and thoughts in the brain and how they're showing up in the same areas of the brain, no matter where you're from, what language you speak, what gender you are, if you're binary, not binary, if you change your, you know, yourself, if you transition, it doesn't matter. It lights up in the same space. When I learned of this study late to the party, as I sometimes am, because he's been doing it for more than 10 years, I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm encouraged. I know this is going to work. And I was thinking about history and looking at faces in history books and in art history books. And you see these pictures of people. We don't know them. They're just faces, right? Just faces. Some of these people had to stand there for 20 minutes to get the darn picture. And, you know, so they couldn't even smile, right? And so, but I'm thinking about the stories to those people that I don't know. And that's how I got to this work. I just think we're all connected. We just, we're not sure how. I'm a little fruity and I'm very spiritual in that way. And I think art does make a difference. I mean, I love to listen to music and I can't sing, so I won't even try. I have an intuitive sense of movement and dance. Thank you, some friends who said, you know, you kind of anticipate music. And I'm like, yeah, that's all I got, you know, and I try to have fun. And but I'm very serious. I live and breathe it. My studio is part of my home, so I can come in and out of it as much as I need to. Because as much as it is a place that I come to communicate with others, it's a place I come to organize, to work it out for myself, to understand this disconnection, this dichotomy, this conundrum of the whole era we are living in. And we could, you know, like all of us, we're thinking of this other, who, you know, what happened to like trying to do the right thing, you know, be the better person. I'm sorry, I'm a child of the 60s. I still think of that stuff, you know, and I think we need to remember that before this whole place blows up and bounces us all off. Because who said we're the humans are the most important thing here other than us? We have to put it back together. We can't just be like, you know, we have to do this Baroque Renaissance kind of thing again. You know, we have to make history repeat itself. And I hope my work leads that charge in a new way. So, you know, we don't objectify people. I'm a Jewish background. I'm speaking to two people who are African American. I don't know how you describe yourselves. I hope we all just say we're American.
We're humans.
We're humans because it's only since World War II that we don't have to check off Jewish. I mean, and Jews have been in this country for a long time doing things. So a lot of, some people aren't going to like it, but a lot of American ideas are Jewish ideas, this acceptance.
They are.
Even though there's a lot of bad Jews out there who did bad things or couldn't make the right choices, only did as good as they could in different parts of history. All that said, it's our time to do something better, bigger. We need this Baroque Renaissance, in my mind, of humanism to remember and to accept differences and to raise that status quo. There was other times in American history when the very, very wealthy paid a little bit higher tax because they could, because who needs multiple billions? When people can barely have $35,000 a year. I'm not saying they should get it for free, but, you know, after World War II, this country did something really amazing by trying to raise the middle bar. And they didn't come running to fix it for, you know, Japanese people. They didn't come running originally to fix it for Jewish people in that era. But that, it's just another pattern in history. You know, what happened in this country racially, what's still happening, you know, the disgusting things I hear with Latins or Spanish. It's like, give me a break. Look at Miami. If we didn't have a Latin community rebuilding Miami, it wouldn't be what it is today. And I live there through that. You know, I have family that are Cuban, you know, people who ran for their lives from Cuba. We have people in LA ran in after Iran, you know, they need it. The world's full of it. The history keeps repeating. We have to get past. I don't know why we're not doing better.
Right.
But that's what drives me. Yeah. That's part of what drives me. But no one wants to hear me say that, honestly, in the art world. No one wants to talk about that because this isn't, that's not, it's not popular. It's more popular to look at me, I'm this way, I'm marginalized, look at my voice, because for the last 500 years, no one listened to my voice, you know, and so now these three museum shows that honor women or honor people of color or honor Latin, we're going to fix everything, or Latin or Asian or put whatever buzz you need. We've all always been.
So do you feel like in your work, do you like, even though that might not, as you're talking to people, that, those are like some of the deeper,
to say a few things that I really feel, but I expect the regular person when they're looking at my work to see the image, hopefully look at it slowly enough that they could drop their guard and hear that speaking, hear that voice, and then have that conversation and enjoy it. And just listen and participate, speak back. If it says something not nice to you, tell it, you know, off. Just talk back to it and put it in its place.
Well, I think it's perfect because...
Or love it back.
It just shows how, like, that's the thing that we talk about too, that the art, like you as an artist, what you're doing is very intentional. Like, I mean, you're tapping into like maybe some, like we talked about some intuitiveness. That
subconscious, say it. Right. There's some of it.
Right.
That's how we survive. That's a human survival skill.
Yeah. And it's important too, because that's how... And so it's the same thing. It's like when we're looking at the portraits, we're not talking about racial background, cultural background. It's just about the emotion, about the person, about their smile, about their eyes. And so it's
that's why there's so much color in the work. Color, because color and emotion go hand in hand. I work very hard just to bring it to a high key, which means a lighter value to represent the spirit, the human spirit, the glowing of the spirit, the aura, but nothing literal, just to create that energy. And because I'm not interested in what flesh tones we are. I'm not interested in what our exact features are. I'm only interested in our emotional expressions.
And then when we talked to you at the art fair, even though you didn't have to say all of the other going into some of the deeper things, it was just communicated. Like we totally
thank
understood.
You. Thank
like,
you. Guys.
And so that's what we're talking about.
This is the blessing, whether you bought the work or not. We're meeting, we're talking, we're having this connection in this big world. If it wasn't for the art fair, we wouldn't even be sitting here. You know?
And then that's the thing too. Kind of like when you were talking about you hope art is important. And you hope your art touches other people. And that's the thing. I'm sure, like, even with the girl that ran back to talk to you, she had to, that probably was the thing that moved her as well. You know, even though maybe you didn't have to necessarily break down all the political, but we will have the pieces but there in will the show
be,
notes.
Yes, yes. There will be many photos, us, so you guys can see, and pictures from the LA art show. But I think that I'm very aware that there's that all of that is for me to, again, organize, try to understand and try to break through part of the experience in the world I live in and my own experience. Whoever I meet, I can just try to be me. And then the artwork gets to be it, that extension of me that's just a face meeting your face.
And you know, that face is beautiful. And we love it.
I love you guys.
Yeah. And
this is a blessing. No one's ever asked me to do this before. And thank you.
Yeah. And just wrapping things up, Brandy, what are some of your latest projects? We know that you just finished up the LA Art Fair and you mentioned that there were some other things that maybe let our audience know.
Some of them are career development. I'll be going to a Kapaipai workshop that's sponsored by the Museum of Art and History in Lancaster. It's an application-based program, but it's for artists to go and meet with professionals and other artists and kind of just up your ante, so to speak, improve your game. It's not a technical skills place. It's an ideas place. It's a communication place. It's some formal presentation, business information, like the real deal. And the next thing I have coming up in... Well, I've been interviewing for residencies. This was a big year to apply to go away this summer. Like all of us, I've had to like figure out, well, how can I go away for a month in the summer? And luckily my family will come and help take over some of my family duties.
She has a husband and a beautiful daughter, by the way, people.
Well, and my 90-year-old mother. Let's not, this is really the bigger responsibility because mom, you know, she's fragile. I'm sure all of us have grandmas and moms and parents and fathers, et cetera, et cetera. So as a family effort, so hopefully one of those will come through. And other than that, I'm continuing to work on Headspace, whether I'm thinking of new names for like the expansion of this body of work, how I'm dealing with the emotions. You guys are here. You're getting to see some of the stuff in the corner that's I'm working on. I'm still thinking. I'm doing my homework. I'm researching other, you know, better way. Always a better way, always a more expressive way. The technical aspects that keep me interested as a craftsman, as a, you know, a couch philosopher, right? We're all couch philosophers, TV binge watcher, thinking about like the time and space we live in. So there's more. There's group shows coming up all over LA. There's one in Chinatown in April, a noir show at Lisa Derrick Fine Arts. I was just in a show at BG Gallery. So there's all these like kind of pop up
gallery.
So and
Lisa, that's interesting. Yeah, we're going to be touching down with the curator at BG Gallery.
He's wonderful. He's so open. And
yeah, Billy. Maybe not. Okay.
Different guy. BG Gallery. Which BG? Okay. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Different BG. I think there's two, actually, that are similar with names. One's gallerist is Om in Santa Monica. And the other one is, I know there's another thing with a similar name. So, but hail to all of them, because that's what makes the world go round. We need all of you guys doing this.
yeah. Awesome. So we want to gain access into the beautiful Randy here.
Okay.
These are just some silly questions that we like to ask.
Okay, let's do it.
A favorite dessert.
I'm so boring. I like vanilla ice cream. And the other thing I like is carrot cake with a real cream cheese frosting, which it's so hard to find that real, like, homemade kind of flavor.
Yeah.
So if anyone has that place, let me know.
Oh, okay.
Because I will eat that. I will eat that.
You know,
the whole thing. Nothing. I will eat the frosting.
Ah, okay.
Until I'm sick.
Right. There is nothing boring with vanilla ice cream. I will eat a bowl of vanilla ice cream. And please don't tell her about ice cream. What color do you best identify with?
That is such a hard question. Because I work in color and... You know, and the color the way I use color when I work and the way I use color when I surround myself in my house, it's really different. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very, that's a very hard question. I thought I wrote down an answer so I could answer. No, that's the one I left blank. Darn.
Well, I guess just all the colors.
I'm a moody girl. Let's put it this way. I like things that are sparkly and iridescent because you can't always paint with those, but they're so pretty when they reflect and cast shadows and do things like that. So I'll just leave it there. Iridescent. Okay. Twinkly and iridescent and sparkly. Okay. I'm a girl.
Yeah. Those all sound lovely.
outer space.
a recommended book that you recommend for
I audience. Recommend The Illustrated Man by Ray Bradbury. Okay, let me try to say that. And I also recommend Siddhartha.
Siddhartha? Oh, mm-hmm. Very. That's
Herman Hesse.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome.
Those are two old favorites. And I read many different things for different reasons, but those two are just, especially lately, The Illustrated Man. Mm-hmm. You know, now tattoos are commonplace. Mm. They're still in some places they're, you know, taboo, but not here. And it's just very interesting. The whole storytelling through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think earlier before the podcast began, we kind of talked about how you like to shake it a little bit sometimes. What would you say your favorite song?
I knew that. You know, that's not fair because that's like all of them, different moods. So I'll just pass. I like lots. I don't have one.
Okay.
Because I love music.
Okay.
So music is like feeling, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, right now, if you want to say, what am I listening to right now? I'm listening to Taylor Swift, If I Were a Man, or I'm the Man, whatever that song is. Because as a woman, I'm just like, oh, girl, we're still singing that. All of us. Sorry to do that to you, Channing, but we're doing it as women, all of us.
Taylor, I feel so bad for you. On the last interview, we just had a discussion about Taylor Swift on the last podcast. Poor Taylor. You know, Taylor, if you want to come onto the show, we will not turn you down.
You know what? I think Taylor's a pretty cool young woman. Like anybody who's growing up in the spotlight, I don't wish that on anyone. Yeah. And I have but I could look at Kesha or all these. I'm really influenced by pop music. I have a teenager. I listen to a lot of what she listens to and a lot of it's good. And I feel like it keeps me young and connected to not just listening to the songs I grew up with, which they don't all last, you know, they're fading for me. Mm-hmm. I see what they were and what, but you know, but it's the young people. I loved Kesha's new album. Any of you out there, listen to it. She's mixing it up. She's speaking from her heart. The girl can sing. She's done her homework. And that's not to say the classics aren't good. They're there. You know, we all like to go to a wedding and do some line dance of something. Electric slide. Right? Of course. The Macarena and the electric slide. Everybody knows those.
Well, I guess that brings us to our last question with the gaining access, your favorite dance.
How about that? I thought about that one. Okay, you're going to laugh. So when I was a little girl in Miami in elementary school, they would have a square dance every week. And I really liked it. And it wasn't hard to do. I don't know if that's still happening in American culture, but I think it's like a really fun thing. Okay. So there, that was one of them. And I wrote that. No, I think that's all I wrote.
That's awesome.
Because
that's awesome.
Otherwise it's free dance in a disco, man. You, I don't care what you think I look like. That's the only thing that was a dance, but it was fun. It was like, do-tsy-do, do-do-do-do. You know, you go around and there was stuff to do, and it was just kind of, to me, it represents some an innocence. Mm-hmm. And it, but then it's folk, isn't it? It's a folk dance that crosses culture and then like place in it. Mm-hmm. So there you have it all again, and that's how I function. I just tie it all up.
You know, it's so funny. We're really big into PBS period films, and every time a dance comes up, you know, from 200-300 years ago, we're like, why aren't we doing that now?
Some of like those dances in like Big Dinner, like the courts, right?
Downtown Abbey or something.
Right. And then other dance. I mean, how about the jitterbugs and all that? And how did my mother do that? You know, I don't know. Because she'd say, come on. I'd be like, no. And the bump and the hustle and come on. It goes on and on and on. The swim and the whatever they did in the 60s, you see on the movies. I don't know if we have that now. Mm-hmm. Everyone's on a pole. That's our new dance. I'm not getting on one. I grew up in Las Vegas. I've seen enough. I've seen it all. With triangles on and less. Or more, with feathers.
Yeah, I think I need to stay far away from any poles.
You might get hurt.
Included.
We don't want it to go in the wrong part of the bodies. We don't want it to go through the center, belly buttons.
Well, you know, Randy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
You're such a wonderful individual. Your art is amazing.
Thank you.
We know the way you're blossoming is awesome. And we're just so happy to have you in our life. And we're happy to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I feel very blessed, you guys.
Wow. You know, that interview with Randy was really spectacular. One of the things I was thinking about as a healthcare worker was when she mentioned Marcel Just of Carnegie Mellon University and that 60-minute interview that he had. That was so unique, seeing how he uses fMRI to map thoughts and feelings and emotions inside of the brain. And in that interview, they also mentioned how scientists, they use art in various forms like drawings, paintings, music, literature, to uncover emotions and thoughts in some of their patients. I thought that was really phenomenal.
I also really enjoyed when she mentioned Ellen Dasaniyake to us. And Ellen Dasaniyake talked about how just throughout history and throughout the world, from big cities to small villages and huts, how there's a pretty good case that making our space special could be a socio-biological need for humans. In fact, I'll add a link in the show notes if any of you guys want to read on that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's really phenomenal. You know, it was such a pleasure interviewing Randy. Stay tuned for next week as we'll be interviewing the musician and sound engineer, Brian Bender. But we really want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening into this interview and being a part of Vessel Art is a Dwarf.